Welcome to episode 9 of season 4 of the Filmmaker Film Watcher podcast. I'm filmmaker Richard DiGregorio.
And I am film watcher in lockdown, Greg Ralph.
Yes, back in lockdown, Greg.
Yay.
So this season, we've sort of gone in and out of sort of lockdown recordings from in-studio recordings. And so now we're
like the Hokey Cokey song.
Yeah, it is. And now we're back into lockdown recordings because we're in lockdown here in Melbourne again. For quite some time to go.
Yes, Si.
But this episode, we're going to talk about films that are based on theme park rides.
This is our Ticket to Ride episode.
So the first film we're going to be talking about is 2003's The Haunted Mansion.
And then we're going to jump up to be much more contemporary and 2021's film Jungle Cruise.
And then we're going to follow on that with the 2015 film, Tomorrowland.
Well, Ricardo, let's not wait until tomorrow. Let's get straight into it. Why don't you tell us about 2003's The Haunted Mansion?
Directed by Robert Minkoff, who also directed family favourites Stuart Little 1 and 2, and also co-directed the original Lion King, The Haunted Mansion centres itself around Jim Evers, Eddie Murphy, a real estate agent from Evers and Evers Real Estate, because you'll be happy for Evers and Evers.
Evers and Evers.
Jim puts work before his family. His wife Sarah, Marcia Thompson, feels he's neglecting his son and daughter, Mark John Jeffries and Ari Davis. So he decides to take them all on a holiday. Along the way, however, he must stop at a spooky old mansion that Jim has been asked to sell. From its huge backyard graveyard to the old pale butler Ramsley, Terence Stamp, they soon discover it has been haunted by its master, Gracie, Nathaniel Parker, who seems strangely obsessed with Sarah. The family are soon split apart in the haunted house, with Jim trying to find his family, all the while Gracie creepily tries to come onto Sarah, while the kids follow a floating light to the attic, where they see a painting of a woman who looks just like their mum, Sarah. They all eventually discovered the haunted mansion's dark secret from Madame Leota, Jennifer Tilly, a talking head in a crystal ball. Gracie is indeed dead and believes Sarah is the reincarnated spirit of his deceased love, and he hopes that by killing Sarah, he can end the curse on him and they can finally rest in peace together in the afterlife. Among the other supporting ghost characters are Wallace Shawn as the manservant Ezra and Dina Spybe as maid Emma. Now, I've never been to Disneyland, so I've never ridden this ride. So looking at this with no knowledge of it, I thought it was okay. Looking at the positives, it has a beautiful production design and art direction. The Haunted Mansion itself is really wonderful. The costumes are also fantastic, especially when the film looks back to the past. The makeup effects by Rick Baker, always sublime. The digital effects are also pretty good for its day. So from a production point of view, you can see where the money was spent. It's the screenplay and the direction that's, well, a bit pedestrian. For a film that's meant to be funny, it's light on laughs. For a film that's meant to be spookily scary, it's light on the scares. One of the funniest scenes where statues who sing songs that echo Jim's lines, and the scariest scenes were in a mausoleum. Now that scene in particular seemed too scary for the film's intended audience. I think before that scene, a six-year-old could watch it happily. The performances are all okay. Terence Stamp has fun. Eddie Murphy is Eddie Murphy, and the kids do their best, but Marcia Thompson is quite two-dimensional in her role. Now, apparently, if you liked the ride, you hated the movie. The ride is said to rely on dark humour, whereby the movie is more slapstick humour. I don't hate it at all, but just found it a bit bland. Greg, what did you think?
Well, speaking of bland,
yeah.
Just picking up on one thing you said there about Rick Baker, the famous makeup artist who did this, who did American Wolf in London, did Michael Jackson's Thriller music clip and so on.
Oh, he's also
actually in
Eddie Murphy's Nutty Professor, all of those sort of films. He's an amazing makeup artist.
Did you know he's actually in the film?
No.
He plays one of the ghosts in the graveyard scene when Eddie Murphy's character and the two kids and then the manservant and the maid, when they go there, he's one of the ghosts who is hiding behind a tombstone, and his makeup, his appearance, is based on one of the features of the ride. Now, I have been on this ride.
Yeah, this is great, yeah.
I had heard of it for many years, and in fact, I saw this film when it first came out of the movies back in 2003.
Mm.
And I liked it. I didn't love it, but I liked it. But since then, we were in Euro Disney 8 years ago and on a family holiday, and we went on the ride, and I loved it, and it was the only ride I went back to, I think, multiple times. I would have done it 3 or maybe 4 times in the space of a weekend.
Yeah, right.
And I loved it because it's fun, and I rewatched it about a month ago, and that led to a conversation that you and I had, which led to the idea for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it more of a second time around, I think, because my expectations were probably a bit lower to start with, but because I've been on the ride, and I think the ride's great. And I also then went on to watch a little Disney documentary about the history of the ride.
Yeah.
And it really struggled to get going because there were these competing visions of scary versus fun.
Right,
now,
yes.
There's probably some of that going on in the film.
I think the film does battle with that as well, yeah.
Oh, I think it's mostly light. The mausoleum scene is scarier than the rest of it.
Yeah, it is. It's quite dark.
Absolutely a central set piece of the film. But I didn't struggle with that in the same way as I did in Jungle Cruise that we'll talk about.
Yeah, sure.
I think, it's scary, but they don't actually threaten to do anything to you. They just kind of loom at, the father and daughter.
They do, but
there's a sense of this is scary, but it wasn't horrible.
No, but I think the intended demographic was for young kids. I think they decided for a younger audience. Because it really is that sort of slapstick.
I'm not sure that's true of Eddie Murphy. I mean, this is 2 years after he first did Donkey and Shrek, so he would have been more of a family kind of actor.
Yeah, it's family, but I think a six-year-old could have watched this easily up until that scene. I think it's definitely not intended for teenagers who would just find it a bit naff. Under 10, absolutely. But those scenes in the mausoleum were quite, six, seven-year-old.
I get what you're saying.
That's a battle.
I don't think the film would have suffered if they had made them have to go and get this key from the mausoleum, maybe have the one character, the undead kind of character, sit up in the coffin. And because it's quite a clumsy, kept missing Eddie Murphy. They could have made that a bit more humorous and then kept out all the other sort of advancing zombie characters.
Yeah, but look, quite honestly, I think that's one of the best scenes, and that's one of my favourite scenes in it. I think it's quite a great scene. I loved all the zombies coming out of the side coffins and all the rest of it.
But for an older kid's film, I think that's...
That's right.
I think we agree on that.
Yeah.
So if I was in charge of this film, having no filmmaker skills, but I think it would have made more sense to compress the scary kind of factor and make it that little bit more humorous. But I do like this film. It's not a great film. There's a lot of people who don't like it. It got panned by the critics when it first came out.
Yeah, it got very panned. Unfairly panned, quite honestly.
Oh, I think so.
I don't think it's that bad. I mean, I remember getting 1-star reviews and everything. I mean, it's not that bad.
Well, I think it has real strengths. The first one, just in keeping with our theme for this episode, is that it does build in a lot of the elements of the ride, and it does it in a way that suggests that they're sort of paying tribute to the ride, but doesn't feel like it's steering the story.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things like, there's the door where the creepy hand or something is sort of forcing through the door as it becomes kind of elastic.
Yes.
There's Madame Leota, the woman in the crystal ball. That was one of the early features of the ride.
Apparently that is one of the main features of the ride.
Yes,
isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I have to say, when I talk about the ride, apparently there are different versions of this experience at the different theme parks.
Oh, okay.
So I might be talking particularly from a Euro Disney perspective, I don't know. But the portraits that transform, so when Eddie Murphy sort of comes out from the hidden panel in the hallway and is going down this corridor of portraits, and as he goes past the pictures, they transform into more kind of deathly, ghostly versions of the image. That's a very strong part of the ride I went on, where you go into a big room, you sort of line up to go into the house, and then you go into this big room, and there are, I think, 4 paintings on the walls, and the room is actually a big kind of industrial elevator.
Yeah,
and as you go down, but the ceiling stays where it is. So the walls actually become longer to about, you know, maybe a story or so below. And the paintings that look like they had finite bottom borders, you know, the golden frame.
Yeah.
The frame goes down with you. So the paintings get longer. And what looked like quite idyllic scenes, like I think there was a bride and groom and a woman on a picnic or something, as the floor drops, you see the longer versions of these paintings, and they're quite kind of gothic in the same way as that. So that's there. So is, you know, the statues that, you know, when he walks around, there's the old man and lady statues, and they kind of turn their heads and follow him.
Yep.
In the ride, what they apparently do is they have these statues that are actually concave rather than convex things. And the lighting's done in such a way, too, that as you move, it does feel like the statues are following you.
Wow.
So it's, you know, the whole thing is based on terrific, you know, thinking and effects. The couples at one stage dancing in the ballroom, you know, the ghosts.
Yeah.
That's a very famous version of Pepper's Ghost, which is an old theatrical technique, where you go past this ballroom and you see these see-through ghosts dancing because it's apparently mannequins that do that below where you are, but the lighting set up that it projects into the space of a kind of a Miss Havisham banquet table. Yeah. And ditto for the singing statues and so on. So I think it does that all quite well. I think that's one of its strengths. So if you don't know the ride, I think, like you, for example, you can still enjoy the film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas I don't think that's true of Jungle Cruise, which we'll talk about. And I think, you know, when you look at the film just as a film, I think everyone's actually quite good in it. I don't think the mother was particularly two-dimensional, but it was weird that Gracie was actually a bit stalkery, spooky, creepy.
Look, you know, I just found her performance very, like, if it's concerned, it's just concerned. Play sad, you're sad.
Well,
play
she didn't angry, have a lot to do. I mean, no, her role was to kind of set up Eddie Murphy's
I know,
role.
But it's direction as well. I'm not just going to blame the performance. It's direction as well. But she, it's just that, you know, there was just
otherwise, she was basically, she was a listening post.
Yeah, I know, but she was...
That's all she was given.
There was no light and shade in it. And so I think, I think there's stuff you can do between the lines and between that which you can show that you're actually connected. I just found...
Well, she wasn't the strongest, but I thought she was fine. The kids have something meaningful to do throughout the story.
Yeah, they do. They're actually quite
the wisecracking kind of Hollywood kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
The family actually felt real and believable to me.
Yeah, they did. No, they did.
And it's really quite tight. You know, it's pretty much spot on an hour and a half, whereas the other films we're going to talk about go for slightly over 2 hours, and I kind of felt they were outstaying their welcome a bit. But so it's nice and tight, and as you say, the set designs are just magnificent.
Oh, look, the production values of it are fantastic. They're really, really good.
It's interesting you say that the mausoleum was a bit much for kids, because I actually felt that more strongly for the scene when Gracie hangs himself.
That as well. That as well.
Right at the very start.
Yeah, absolutely. That's quite dark.
You know, she dies pretty much off camera because she's poisoned. And you find out eventually there's a reason why you don't quite see how it happens. But he could have, like, just jumped out a window full stop. He could have taken poison himself.
Yeah, but the hanging...
The fact that he was hanging there...
And they showed it. Like, they did show it. It was quite...
I know, and I'm not sure...
Cracking neck and whatnot, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if that's actually... I've got a funny feeling that might be a motif from the house.
Yeah, right.
Or at least one of them. But it... It just felt wrong in the film.
Yeah.
And because you see it pretty much up close as well.
I really
liked it. It's not like the thing in the distance.
I really liked Wallace Shawn in it.
Yeah, look, he's always good. I mean,
he's always good. He makes me laugh.
I read something somewhere that said that, I must have missed it, but every time I've seen it, but I read somewhere that he's given these lines where he says something like, you know, incredible or something.
He does.
To kind of pick up on the Princess Bride, you know, inconceivable.
That's right, he does.
I missed that.
Did you? And how did you miss that?
I was probably too scared.
Oh, my goodness. That was so incredible.
Okay, all right. Well, if I missed that, did you pick up the Mickey Mouse references?
Okay. Subtle missing Mickey Mouse. No, I didn't pick up on the subtle Mickey Mouse reference.
Oh, shame on you.
Hang on a minute. You didn't pick up on one of your favourite movies, the inconceivable line, when he was going, incredible, incredible, from the same actor. You didn't pick up that, but you picked up the subtle Mickey Mouse references.
Let me be really clear about this. I didn't pick it up. I read about it afterwards and went back and looked.
Okay. But...
Because I'm an honest fellow,
yep.
But there are a number of things I kind of picked up on it, but didn't quite pick up on it in one instance. But there are a number of things that are Mickey Mouse shaped, you know, the circle head and the two circles for ears, And the first one you really see, and the one I kind of picked up on, was the padlock to the gate.
Oh, of course.
It's quite an odd shape.
Yeah.
And then the others that I've seen online, I haven't actually had time to go back and look, but there is a chair, there's part of a ghost in a portrait or something, where you can see that they had fun. I had one little quibble with one scene. So back to that mausoleum section.
Yes.
Where the daughter has to dive underwater to retrieve the key.
Yep.
Next thing, they're in the house and she's bone dry.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's like, yeah, it's kind of continuity 101.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're right.
I also thought there were some good lines. I know you said you didn't think it was very funny, but there were some. I like the little reference to The Sixth Sense when the son says, "Dad, I see dead people," when they're going to the cemetery.
Yeah.
Okay. And at one stage, one of the ghosts says to Eddie Murphy's character, "Are you upset?" And he says, "The guy is dead and he's trying to get with my wife. And the house isn't really for sale. Yes, I'm upset." I like that line.
Yeah.
It kind of gave you the insight to the character as well. Yeah, that was the kind of transition he was making.
There's a few lines that Eddie Murphy said which were funny, because I do find Eddie Murphy quite funny in a lot of other things. Like I said, I just felt bland. It was just felt bland by the end of it. I was just, and as I sort of went through the week, and I was just thinking about it, just going, meh.
Well, you know, it came out the same year as the first Pirates of the Caribbean film.
It was only a month later.
Which was a smash hit, and certainly has a lot more heft to it. But no, look, I think it's fine, but I've got some really great news for you. And this is so, you know, in the moment news break. Did you know they're making a remake?
Of The Haunted Mansion?
Yep.
Are they?
Last I heard, the working title is Joyride. And they've signed up a couple of actresses I've never actually heard of. But today they've announced that Owen Wilson is joining the project as well.
Oh, wow.
So the production actually is starting this month in September.
Wow.
So the sequel will be heading our way. So maybe you and I can go together.
Yeah, let's go. Let's give it a bit of a...
See if you enjoy it more and if I'm less scared.
Yeah. What are you going to give it, Greg?
I'm going to give it 7 out of 10.
Ooh, jeepers. That's high, Greg. That's very high.
Well, maybe I have the added dimension of having been on the ride. So yeah, I have those associations.
That's
a key difference for the two of us on this particular film.
Valid.
Look, I enjoyed it. And so I watched it a month ago, but I rewatched it. And I thought I might give it a lower mark. But actually, it was a little bit boosted by the fact that of the three, it's the one that I enjoyed most.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
So that pushed it up a bit for me.
That's really interesting. I'm giving it a 5 out of 10.
Yep.
I couldn't give it any higher, really. I didn't really want to go lower. I thought that was a bit harsh, but because it's still like there are enjoyable moments in it, and the production values are fantastic, so it's worth a watch. But I had to go.
I think it achieved what it set out to achieve, and remembering that whole kind of subgenre of Disney rides turned into films was still quite new. As far as I'm aware, the only one before that was the Tower of Terror.
Yeah,
and then
right.
This and Pirates came out. Mm. So they're still kind of finding their way for it a bit. But look, I enjoyed it. And as you know, for me, 7 out of 10 is kind of the lower end of good. And I that's how I thought about it.
So our next film is one of our most recent discussions of a movie, is Jungle Cruise from this year. So Greg, tell us all about it.
This recent film is based on Disneyland's popular ride in Adventureland. Walt Disney was inspired by the 1951 film The African Queen to create the ride, and Jungle Cruise is similarly inspired. Both films tell the story of a woman who joins forces with a gruff captain in a riverboat adventure against the German army in World War I. This time it's Dr. Lily Horton, Emily Blunt, who comes to South America with her brother McGregor, Jack Whitehall. They're searching for the Tears of the Moon, a legendary tree that can cure any illness or injury and lift any curse. After dismissal by London's male-only Explorers Club, they're pursued by Prince Joachim, Jesse Plemons, who wants the tree's miraculous petals to win the war for Germany. Once in South America, Lily is advised to hire Nilo Nemolato, Paul Giamatti, who owns most of the local fleet. However, mistaken identity and a jaguar attack lead them to hire highly capable and pun-loving riverboat captain Frank Wolf, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Apparently on the ride, the boat captain's lame jokes are a key feature. Prince Joachim pursues them in his submarine. cheerfully destroying many of Nilo's harbour assets in the process. But our heroic trio escapes and has many adventures on their quest. Prince Joachim enlists four 16th century Spanish conquistadors to get him to the prize first. These men, led by Aguirre, Edgar Ramirez, were cursed 5 centuries ago through their bloodlust for the petals. They are now doomed to never die or return home, but developing new powers based on the jungle's plants and animals. The petals' ability to lift their curse is the incentive offered by Prince Joachim. As Lily warms to Frank, she discovers that he himself has some connection to the Tears of the Moon, and she becomes unsure whether she can trust him. Frank, in turn, learns why McGregor is so bonded to his sister, even though he is clearly unsuited and overpacked for a jungle adventure. This film was obviously made for 3D cinemas, an effect lost on my large screen TV at home. I suspect it would work better as a 3D movie ride at IMAX, an experience denied to us in Melbourne's current lockdown. Look, it was fine for me as an adventure film, very much in the mode of The Mummy and Indiana Jones franchises. But once you take out the variable CGI effects, it feels like a high-budget 1970s Disney film. I found the first half curiously uninvolving. Emily Blunt reportedly turned down the initial offers to play Lily, as she was exhausted from the Mary Poppins and A Quiet Place sequels. I think it shows in her performance, as she seems to be missing deeper sparkle. Frank's character feels constrained by his dad joke persona, and Paul Giamatti's performance is an unbelievably hammy Italian caricature. I thought Jack Whitehall was the best thing in it. He brought the heart and the smiles to the story. For example, we both laughed at home when he said, "There's a small chance I told a madman with a cannon where to find you." While the film picked up in the second half, including an impressive revelation of the tree's hiding place, I'm confused about its target audience. It doesn't feel like a family film. It's too gross and scary for the littlies, with scenes that horrified my wife, who was a teacher. And there's also a couple of crass jokes and a little bit of swearing in this M-rated film for more mature audiences. Now, while you're constantly reminded of one of the film's acknowledged influences, Indiana Jones, I'm kicking myself that I totally missed all the signposts to the African Queen. For example, Lily's surname, Horton, was Katharine Hepburn's middle name. And Frank's outfit is based on the Disney ride's boat captains, who are themselves based on Humphrey Bogart's character. I think there's a bit of a lost opportunity here by not acknowledging Mickey Mouse's first cartoon, Steamboat Willie. But maybe I missed it. Ricardo, how did you go?
Look, you're right. It's Indiana Jones, it's The Mummy, it's even a bit of Romancing the Stone in there a little bit.
Well, that
as
was the third film that they've acknowledged. They said it was
right.
Indiana Jones, Romancing the Stone, and African Queen.
It's based on a ride? I think this is a ride, and a thoroughly enjoyable one. I really enjoyed this film. I thought it was great chemistry between Blunt and Dwayne Johnson. I disagree. I think she's wonderful in it. I really like her in everything she does. But he is as well.
Normally so do I, but I didn't feel it here.
Oh, I did. I did, absolutely. I thought she was really on form, and so was he. His comic timing is always brilliant. The delivery, absolutely. The delivery of his bad jokes were really funny, and that was a great...
No.
I did. I found them really funny. I was laughing. But you're right. Jack Whitehall is very good in it, actually. You're right.
And you know, he's pretty much constantly present, and yet he had fourth billing below Edgar Ramirez.
Yeah, right. And I agree with you about Paul Giamatti. That was probably the worst character in the film. Look, as you can expect from this big tentpole Disney film, the effects, fantastic.
No, sorry, I don't agree.
Mostly, the Jaguar
didn't feel right.
Oh, the Jaguar was a little bit CGI, you could tell that. But I thought for most part it was a very, very well done in terms of the effects. Fantastic. But you've seen this film before. You know, it's nothing new to this film, but that doesn't make it sort of easy to write. Hang on a minute. But it doesn't make it easy to write or construct that. You know, it's a lot of fun. I think the screenplay was quite okay, and I think it was really tight all the way through it. I didn't think it lagged at the beginning. I don't think that it took a long time to get going. I didn't think...
I didn't say it took a long time to get going. I just wasn't feeling terribly involved. I thought it was fine for the scenes, the early scenes in London.
Yep.
But when she arrived, first of all, in the harbourside town, including, you know, the attack by the submarine, and Giamatti didn't help, certainly, I was just kind of like, oh, yeah. And it was only once they really got going the voyage, maybe around the time of the rapids, that I felt, you know, that it was kind of moving again. But there were scenes that I was really quite horrified by, and there were some that, you know, my wife, you know, maybe, you know, doesn't like, you know, snakes coming out of skulls and so on. But it was the attack on the village and the slaughter of the villagers I had a real problem with.
Right, okay. That's interesting. I didn't. I thought that I was looking for that sort of darker moment there. I thought it was quite okay.
Did you watch this with your son?
I did, yeah.
And what did he reckon?
He was fine. He was fine with it. He's 11 and he was absolutely fine. Didn't shirk at that, really. It was
I just thought it was a really odd take for a family movie. And as I say, I'm not sure it is a family movie. I'm not really sure who it's for. So you had that problem.
I think it is. We watched it as a family, and we loved it as a family. So
Didn't.
I think the enemies are really creative. I think the honeybee undead guy is really funny and different.
Oh, the conquistadors, I agree.
The conquistadors are great. The tree.
And when you find out what the
curse
is, that was quite interesting.
The snake man.
What was the fourth one? So there was the leader was the snake guy. There was the honeybee guy. There was the woods and forest guy. Was that one?
Yeah,
just
which
an
is
axe?
Like Groot. It looks like Groot, the guy with the big.
He did actually. But what was the fourth one? Was he just an axe, basically?
I think it was just an axe, yeah, or something like that.
Which kind of stood out a bit. Like the others were, as I say, the natural flora and fauna.
Yes.
And then he's got an axe.
Yeah, or something. Yeah, yeah.
It thematically didn't feel like it quite worked.
But Jesse Plemons has a lot of fun in this role.
Yep.
As the German. I mean,
have you seen him before?
I have. He was in The Irishman. He was also in Game Night. So I really like him in everything he's in. But you know what I really love? I think the twists in this, I don't want to give away any twists in it, but the twists in it are quite good. They surprised me. So I liked it that they had some twists and turns.
It really lost me in two places. It lost me in those sequences around the harbourside town.
Mm-hmm.
And it lost me because I thought there were parts that were inappropriate. And I'm thinking particularly of that slaughter of the villagers.
But one thing I really loved, the artwork in the credits.
The closing credits or the start?
The closing credits.
Remind
beautiful
me,
watercolors. Beautiful watercolor sort of
oh, yes, sorry. Yes, they were great.
In the credits.
Yes.
They were really nice. And I just thought that looks really, they're beautiful actually. But otherwise, enjoyable film for me. It was fun.
Well, I have a fun fact for this. Do you know when the film was first proposed back in 2011, so 10 years ago, do you know who was proposed for the two leads?
No.
It was two guys. It wasn't a male-female thing.
Oh, right. Well, right. Who were they?
It was Buzz Lightyear and Woody from Toy Story. So Tom Hanks and Tim Allen. Yeah, apparently.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's interesting.
Well, I hear they are on the road to making the sequel.
I think it's done very well.
I didn't love it, as you can hear.
So in terms of my score, I'm giving it a 7 out of 10 because I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really, you know, it's not a classic or anything like that or up in the 8s, 9s and 10s. But for what it is, I think it's for that type of film, it's worth a watch.
What did you give Haunted Mansion?
5.
Now, I'm giving this a 6.
I think it's better than that. But
well, that's obvious because you said 7. I do understand basic maths. Now, before we get into our third Disney ride film, Ricardo, I just want to check, have you actually ever been to a Disneyland?
No, never.
So you've never been on any of these rides?
Never. Nope.
I think I might have been on Jungle Cruise when I was very young. I've certainly been on Tomorrowland, which is a really artificially created way of bringing you in to say, tell us about Tomorrowland.
I will. So you've been on all three rides?
I've been on at least 2 and maybe 3. The only thing I really remember, I was like 6 or 7.
Yeah.
So it was the original one in America. But I have a memory of actually the lining up experience to get into the ride. Because what you saw was when it was your turn, you got into one of those kind of, you know, roller coaster carriage kind of things.
Yeah, right.
That went straight ahead. And it went straight ahead into this area. And then what you saw was the car shrink down to be little models. It was just a model that you were led to believe somehow were the people who's got on.
Oh,
and being
fantastic.
A very inquisitive 6 or 7 year old, I was starting to compare the clothes of the real people with the little toy kind of thing. But I just remember thinking, and then going in, and all I can remember is kind of light and sound. But yeah, it was, wasn't a bad ride, but it was more that initial moment for me. But this is all a way of escaping you telling us about Tomorrowland.
I will.
Let's do it today.
Directed by Brad Bird, who directed The Incredibles 1 and 2, 2015's Tomorrowland revolves around Casey, Britt Robinson, a teenage daughter to a father working at a NASA launch center. She takes after her dad and is a science whiz kid herself. With the launch center closing down, her dad will be out of work, so she deliberately sneaks in and tries to stop them from doing that by sabotaging the equipment. She is caught and thrown in jail. When released, she is given back her personal items and discovers a pin, which is not hers. Upon touching it, she finds herself in a future world. The pin, however, runs out of energy and she's back in the real world. Wanting to know more, she does more investigating, only to be attacked by robots and saved by Athena, Raffi Cassidy, a child robot whose mission is to send her to Frank Walker, George Clooney, who knows how to get to the future world. A world he was banished from. As a child, Frank followed Athena to this world and fell in love with her before finding out she was a robot. Frank refuses to help at first, however, he's forced to leave for the future world when robots suddenly chase them all down. Hugh Laurie, as Nix, is the leader of this future world, who believes that since the people on Earth will destroy their planet, they do not deserve to be saved by arriving in this world. He fears they will only destroy that too. Casey learns that Earth has around 50 days before collapsing from the effects of climate change events, and with the help of Frank, she is the genius who can stop it from happening. This film is beautiful to look at, from the cinematography, the production design, the effects, it's first class. I love the scenes when Casey touches the pin, where the scene perfectly match cuts into her new world. And while Brad Bird directs the action beautifully, he also directs the more emotive, subtle scenes well. But again, it's the screenplay that's a bit convoluted and a little...
I agree.
And a little on the nose, particularly with the climate change message. I got the message. I didn't need a monologue of Hugh Laurie spelling it out. The film's editing was also off with its pacing. It took a long time to get going. I felt like it was a long time before we actually got to Frank's house. I was confused by the beginning, being shown Frank's past, then moving to Casey's story. But in the end, I did enjoy it, but it was just a little bit disappointed considering Brad Bird's past work is just so tight. Greg, do you agree?
Look, in general terms, I do. We haven't actually said if we've seen these movies before, and I have seen Haunted Mansion before at the movies. I also went to see Tomorrowland. Of course, Jungle Cruise is new, but these three films are all new to you, aren't they?
All new.
Yeah. I was doing some reading around it after I watched it this second time, and I found a comment from a journalist, a reviewer, called Ty Burr in Boston, and I think he got it absolutely right. He said it's rapturous on a scene-by-scene basis, and nearly incoherent when taken as a whole. And I think you've pretty much said the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is, there are things that are beautiful. And the thing that got me to go and see the film in the first place were those bits you mentioned that they made a big thing of in the kind of the trailers, where she touches that badge, you know, the pin,
yes,
and is instantly transported. And it moves her seamlessly between this kind of dingy police waiting room and this bright golden future.
Yeah,
and I reckon that where she ends up, it really feels like that's a reference to The Wizard of Oz, because she's in the middle of this cornfield. She's
it
Dorothy.
It does look like that, doesn't it?
Who's suddenly come across. She's in the middle of this beautiful golden cornfield, and in the distance you can see the sort of, you know, the wondrous city.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah. But I've seen it twice now, and when I saw it, and it's only, you know, only 6 years ago when I saw it at the movies, and I really couldn't remember much about the story at all. I remembered images, particularly that transporting bit of Casey, but I'd forgotten about the two animatronic robots working in that geek, you know, pop culture kind of store, both with kind of science fiction names, Ursula, Catherine Hahn, and Keegan-Michael Key, Hugo. And, you know, the Hugos, I think, are the major awards for science fiction novels or films or both.
Right.
So I'd forgotten that, but that was quite, again, quite a striking sequence.
Yeah, it was.
I'd forgotten about the Eiffel Tower.
The Eiffel Tower was great.
The Eiffel Tower is both an antenna and a rocket launcher. Which was quite a nice conceit.
But there was a lot of great scenes like that. But you're right, as a whole...
The story just... It's too confusing. I feel really stupid, but I still don't quite understand parts of the story. Like, why was Frank actually chucked out of Tomorrowland? Like, he built the sphere and that was bad?
I'm a bit confused about that. I didn't know whether it was because of the sphere or was because he fell in love with her and then he just was...
That's why he chose to leave, but not why he was chucked out.
Banished, yeah. It's a bit confusing.
There were all these little things that I just thought, I don't really quite understand... I'm going with the flow with the visuals and so on, but I don't really understand what the story is really about.
Hugh Laurie's final monologue he ranted on about was just so on the nose.
Yeah, it didn't really quite work, did it?
Well, I got the references. I got all of that. I knew what I was trying to say, but not about the different worlds and us treating things better. I got it, but not. You didn't need a whole raving monologue about it, which is, you know.
This film, like the other two, you know, is a little bit violent, you know, one way or another. But I don't think it matters here because this doesn't strike me as being a family film. I think this is a kind of an adolescent plus film.
Yeah, it is. Cass did watch it with us and he quite enjoyed it as well. Yeah.
And, you know, that's exactly who I thought of when we first met young Frank, the boy inventor. I thought of
your
son.
Yes, I thought.
I bet he loves this.
He does.
But it just, didn't hang together, which is a pity.
It is a pity because I quite like the trailer to Tomorrowland, and I remember the reviews came out were a little bit like this, a bit ho-hum about it. But I remember looking at the trailers going, this actually looks really good though. Is this one of those films that is just getting a bad rap and I'm gonna really enjoy it? Which I think is kind of like a Vanilla Sky or something, which got really bad reviews, and
which I haven't seen,
and I really loved. I really enjoyed, but I thought it might be one of those. But no, I kind of agree with the reviewers here that it is very convoluted and a bit confusing, and you know, pacing's off. But I think that's to do with screenplay and editing. I think the editing could have been a lot better. It could have been a lot tighter. You could have shaved 10 to 15 minutes off that first beginning.
Yeah, but you'd still have to, you know, make some things make more sense, like a clear exposition about why Frank left Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
The whole speech from Hugh Laurie's governor character, which didn't quite make sense, but he had to be killed for it by the script, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
You know that this film actually refers to two Disney rides, because it's quite a nice conceit that the way that Frank first gets to the future is by going on the It's a Small World ride.
Right. Is that a ride in Disney
that
World?
That is a real ride, and that part of the film was set in 1964 at the World Trade Fair, whatever
it's
called.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that's right.
I have been on that ride at Disney, the original Disneyland, probably in about 1968, so not long after that.
Yeah.
And at that stage, it was a highlight because it is full of all these little kind of singing, dancing, cutesy kind of children from around the world. And as you go on the riverboat and you go, you know, through the different kind of rooms, if you like, you know, they're different continents and areas of the world. So, you know, there's one with Eskimo kids dancing with singing penguins and whatever else. It's a seminal ride, and it's a really lovely conceit that that's the way he gets to the other place, you know, the kind of futuristic place. Because in the end, It's a Small World is basically a ride full of little robots, little animatronic figures like the bad guys in the film. So... again, you wouldn't have related to this in the same way that I have because I've been on the ride. And again, it's a strong childhood memory.
Yeah.
Just this sense of wonder of going around in the boat and just seeing all these things. And that song is so iconic, you know, it's a world of this, it's a world of that. So the fact that he had to go into the robot ride, which is very friendly, you know, child, family friendly kind of ride, to suddenly go into the future where these, you know, not quite as nice robots kind of figures, I thought was a nice aspect of the script. And again, it's that there were really great concepts in there. Great concepts, great cinematography.
Oh,
and I thought everyone was pretty good in their roles.
Yeah, I didn't but think it any, just... the performances were... I thought Britt Robertson was really good. I really like her in it. She was very good.
Yeah,
George Clooney, but he's always serviceable, and I really enjoyed him as well. I mean, everybody, really.
And I loved his booby-trapped house as well.
Oh, fantastic. What a good house.
I know. So,
and those robots, the Terminator-like robots coming to get them, they were a bit funny. But I think some of the violence on there, when, you know, it's because they're robots getting their heads, you know, kicked
off. No, but even when they kind of liquefied the police.
Oh, yeah. Now, that was pretty full on, actually. Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
Particularly the first time it happened when you just weren't expecting it.
Yeah, that's right.
But the, so look, conceptually, visually, fantastic. Nice references to the rides, the two rides, but not being constricted by it, which I felt that Jungle Cruise was. But it's the script. It's the story of a script, the kind of the really tying up loose ends and nailing.
The editing as well.
What this was about. And as you say, the message was just all a bit trite.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah. Completely agree with you. What are you going to give this one, Greg?
I was about to ask you. I'm giving it a 5.
Okay. I thought it was a little bit better. I thought I'm going to give it a 6.
I was hovering on 6, but it just annoys me that I've watched it twice and I still don't really quite get it.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, well, that's it. I've only seen it once. But I remember at the end of it, I was thinking about it the next day and thinking about what it was trying to say and everything like that in terms of its conceptual story. It's a 6 for me. So that concludes episode 9, our Ticket to Ride episode of the Filmmaker Film Watcher podcast. From the consensus of this whole episode, Greg, I don't think we had that much fun on these rides.
Well, it did remind me.
I had a bit of fun, but
it did remind me of earlier this season when we chose some films to lighten our mood because of lockdown. Yes. And while we enjoyed the films we chose, we didn't enjoy the others.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
So let's look ahead beyond tomorrow and Tomorrowland, and let's talk about next time. So next time, which is our closing episode for this season.
Our closing episode of season 4.
Yes, I know. And regular listeners will know that we usually try and end this season with a theme that's got something to do with cinema itself. And so what we're doing this time, we're having what I think will be a special episode, actually, which is called Back to Quarantine. And it has two meanings. As we've said once or twice already in this episode, we here in Melbourne, and I'm sure other parts of the world, have been forced back into quarantine, kind of lockdown, because of the COVID pandemic. And we're so looking forward to a brighter future, a brighter tomorrow in a non-Hugh Laurie kind of way.
Yes.
And so what we're doing is, people might remember that last year we had what we called our Friday quarantine film night, where each week for about 10 or 11 weeks we would recommend a short film and a feature film that people could watch on our recommendation and maybe contribute to our social media page. But we never actually reviewed those films. So what we're planning for next time to round off the season is to pick 3 of the films that we recommended and review them. And one of the reasons I think this episode will be special for me is that one of those films was one that I loved and you'd never heard of before. And when you watched it, you were just so excited. We talked for about an hour about this film just over the phone, because we both... You loved it, and I loved the fact that you loved it. A bit like when I got you to watch It's a Wonderful Life. Yeah,
that's right.
So what's the first film we're going to do, Ricardo?
The first film we're going to look at is 2008's Departures, which is a Japanese film.
Yes, and in fact, we are doing 3 films from 3 very different cultures. The second one we're doing is a French film, a rom-com, called Heartbreaker from 2010. Yep.
And the third film we're going to be discussing is It's a Matter of Life and Death from 1946.
And that's the one I'm really looking forward to talking about again.
To me, it's a fantastic roundup of this season, of this, you know, this season which has been halted sometimes by lockdowns, by COVID, you know.
An optimistic rounding out of the last 18 months of ours and other people's lives.
Absolutely. And
not to say those lives are over.
No, that's right. But I really look forward to, as the vaccine rollouts come out and whatnot, and that we sort of hopefully get back to a bit of normalcy, that we can really kick off our season 5 with
new beginnings. Bright new tomorrow.
Thank you, all of our listeners, for listening to our podcast. It really means a lot.
Being patient with our disruptions.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, for anybody who comments or gives us a review or writes something or likes something on social media, it really, you know, it is fantastic and we love that. We hope you can join the discussion and give us your thoughts when we put up a post about the episode. It's fantastic and we really enjoy that.
So, look, come back next time. We're looking forward to it and, you know, we'd love to have your company again.